Welcome to The Birth Collective, a podcast to honour the birth journey collectively, from conception, pregnancy, through to birth, breastfeeding and beyond. I'm your host, Tina Pullen, and in each episode I'll be joined by experts in the birth space as well as mums at different stages in their birth journey, sharing their knowledge and experiences. Welcome back to another episode of the Birth Collective podcast. And today we are going to be talking about postpartum and postpartum doulas. And today I'm joined by a postpartum doula, Olivia. So Hello. Please welcome Olivia. Hi.
Hi. Thank you so much for having me on and giving me the opportunity to speak about postpartum.
Yeah, and it's a big topic. And, you know, when we talk about birth stories on the podcast, that's a whole other thing. Like, the birth story takes up a lot of time, and then I really want to go into postpartum. But one of the common things, especially for first-time mums that I found, was that there was a lack of preparation for postpartum, and that comes from a place of just not knowing what to expect and not Absolutely. Having that education just available. You know, everyone talks to you about the birth and they don't really talk to you about what happens afterwards. So before we get into that, do you want to just tell us a little bit about yourself?
Yeah, sure. So my name is Olivia. I am married to my husband and we have two beautiful little girls, a 3.5-year-old and a 7-month-old. My professional background is I'm a registered nurse. I've been working in the cardiothoracic intensive care unit for about 10 years now. And during my time being a nurse, I actually trained as a holistic health coach. So that was back in 2016. So that really opened up my world to, health and well-being. Ayurveda actually came up during that course, which I took a huge interest to, and nutrition. I love nutrition. So then I specialized in nutrition and in hormone health. So I love everything to do about hormones as well. And just recently, when my baby, my second child, was about a month old, I decided to train and become a postpartum doula. And specifically postpartum doula. So, and I am Ayurvedically trained in that because that's where my interest lies. And yeah, so that's what I'm doing now.
Wow, I love that. kind of married your background and your interests together. So I think that's pretty cool. So, I mean, what is the postpartum period? What is happening with the body during this time?
Just to sort of clarify, because sometimes people use postnatal and postpartum. So just to clarify, if, you know, people don't know what that is. So the postnatal period is actually about the baby after when they're born, and the postpartum period is when the mother gives birth. So that's why we call ourselves postpartum doulas, because we're looking after the mother. And obviously that is as soon as the baby is born, that is your postpartum. And the postpartum can last years, even sometimes even for the rest of your life. So it really is defined by the mother. It's not just that 6-week mark that we, you know, always talk about. It can last a lot longer than that. What is happening with the body? That is actually a huge question to ask, because a lot of stuff is happening.
We've got time during that time.
Look, I mean, to be honest, the things that I will cover, they could be a whole podcast on their own, because they can be, you know, spoken about in so much detail. But I'll just go through, I guess, the three main things, and I'll just generalize over them and give a little bit of education so people know what's happening with the body. So obviously the physical body, there's lots of changes there. Our brain actually goes through a massive change as well, and our hormones, of course. we can really feel those hormones working. So with our physical body, as you can imagine, after giving birth, the baby, after it exits, that's pretty much about 5 to 8 kilos that you lose instantaneously as soon as you give birth. So that's, you know, the baby, all the fluid and the placenta. So that's a massive shift in weight. And also you can imagine, whilst the baby is growing, when you're pregnant, it is pushing aside all your organs. It's pushing up your diaphragm. After, in the postpartum, your body needs that time to be able to bring, you know, the organs back and, you know, your uterus back down as well, to pretty much pre-pregnancy. So we need to rest during that time. That is going to be my biggest tagline here, resting. So important. And this is horizontal rest, okay? I'm not talking about like sitting or if a walk is a rest for you. No, this is like horizontal rest to give our body that chance to be able to get our organs back into place. Also our pelvic floor. So pelvic floor is a huge one. I'm not a pelvic floor expert by any means. I'm not going to pretend that I know everything about it, but our pelvic floor definitely goes through like a lot of stress during our pregnancy and then our postpartum. So you can imagine as the baby gets bigger, it puts a lot of weight on our pelvic floor, and also our abdominal muscles have to stretch as well to accommodate for that baby. And then when we give birth, the intensity of the labor, and also depending how you have labored, so, you know, whether you've been, you know, cut during that labor, whether you were told to push when your body wasn't ready to push, whether you had a cesarean, all these things really impact on your pelvic floor. And even if you're someone who's naturally given birth, I shouldn't say naturally because every way is natural, but in the physiological sense, given birth, and you haven't had any tears or anything, that still puts a lot of pressure on your pelvic floor. So this is something that needs to be looked after, because essentially we want to try and avoid prolapses from happening. And also it's very common to obviously have urinary incontinence or urinary retention or whatever during this time. So the best way to help our body through that is to rest, be horizontal resting. But also there's really great people you can reach out to, like women's physiotherapists. They're fantastic. They can really assess your pelvic floor and help out with that. So the pelvic floor is a huge one. And the pelvic floor also does encompass our abdominal muscles. So because our abdominal muscles become separated, they become very weakened in the postpartum, because it doesn't just spring back together. It takes a long time. So if you are not looking after yourself and you're trying to get back into, you know, lifting heavy things and doing, you know, all the things that you thought you could do before you had your baby, it puts a lot of stress on that abdominal section, and you can have a lot of issues with like back pain, especially lower back pain. So, you know, resting is super important.
Like you said, resting is horizontal. It's not sitting, because, I mean, if you think about it, particularly mums who breastfeed will sit as their rest because they'll be feeding for hours, you know, during the day. And I just think, especially if they're, you know, they've had stitches or tearing and it's quite uncomfortable, and then they're doing all these things to make it more comfortable. But it's like, why doesn't anyone teach them to feed lying down? Sideline feeding the way that you're like, it's when you look at other animals. I remember when we went to the farm, you see this, see the pig.
That's so
and
true.
And she's lying down and she's got so many little, what they're called, piglets, I don't even know. And they're breastfeeding and they're kind of just like getting on and off, and she's just lying there and having a nap. And I'm like, that's what we're supposed to do. And that's the best way to like have a little rest. And take pressure off the perineum.
Definitely,
which is so uncomfortable for so many women to be sitting for that long. But anyway, that's my little rant there. Let's support women to learn how to sideline feed.
Definitely, as soon that as saved possible. Me that saved me so much, like when
especially
you're so
second time high, I think
you just want to have a little sleep while the breastfeeding's happening, because, you know, people have had children before and have breastfed, you know how long that can take sometimes. So it's nice to learn about the side-lying position, definitely. So I'll speak a bit about the baby brain, or what happens to the brain in the postpartum period. So baby brain has a bit of a bad rap. We see it as a negative thing, you know, when we say, oh, a mother's got baby brain. But in actual fact, which I found really fascinating when I was learning to become a doula, is that our brain actually goes through a huge neuroplastic event. So we only get a few of these in our life. So it happens when we're like a little baby. Also in our adolescent time, we have like this really big neuroplastic event. And then when we are pregnant and have a baby, that's like the third time in our life that we have one. So our brain always does have this ability to adapt and change, and we do have a bit of, you know, neuroplasticity that we can workaround, but it is really when we are pregnant and postpartum that we have this massive shift. So what it means is that new pathways get formed. So what it does is we like to call it in the postpartum, we have a lot of learning and loving. So the learning being that our brain actually crowds out a lot of stuff that we don't really need to think about. So one of those things could be like maths, for example. It's a very common one. We become really silly with like being able to make calculations in our head. I don't know if you've ever noticed that. Have you had that problem before?
I still have it. I'm like 3 years, almost four That's years fine. Post.
That's okay. I don't need it anymore. Forever, remember?
Yeah, true.
So it does crowd out like these things that, you know, it might be like a bit of logical thinking or whatever, but it crowds them out to make room for this new learning. And like the new learning could be obviously adapting to a new life and all of its struggles that it comes with, but also it gives us this ability to be able to be more creative. So, you know, taking on new ventures or taking on new learning opportunities, our brain is really receptive to taking on any sort of new information and really retaining it. So it's actually a really great time for women to take on any learning that they would like to do, because our brain just has that capacity to be able to do that. But even if we don't do it in an actual sense, like, for example, me starting a business and learning about all of this, you don't have to do that. You don't have to go out there and start a business or whatever, but gives us that ability to now be able to be super multitaskers. So you know how you see those mums and you think, oh my gosh, that mum is such a super mum, but it's not really. It's because our brains have now this ability to be able to, just be great at multitasking, be able to foresee what needs to happen and what, like all the things that we need to do for our children. So we need to give our partners, I think, sometimes a little bit of a break, because they don't get this same sort of, brain changes that we do. So we need to give them a bit of grace if they're not kind of doing things as fast as we would want them to. But it's pretty fascinating from that brain point of view how all of this can happen and all this learning can happen. And then the loving part of it is more to do with empathy. So for those people who are listening and have had children before, you could probably relate to the fact that you are more empathetic and you might, cry at a silly advertisement. You're like, why am I crying at this ad? I don't understand. Or, you know, you feel more like called to action. So, you know, you might hear of stories of hardship or of sad things that are happening in the world, and you feel like called to wanting to help out. Or you might find this greater, you know, passion or fire within yourself, and that's that loving bit and that empathy that happens. So yeah,
wow, that explains a lot. Yeah, that explains a lot. Now I'm just looking back at how I was feeling after both babies, and yeah, that explains so much. And can I just make a note here that while Olivia is talking about multitasking, she's literally multitasking, and she's holding her daughter, giving her toys, and still able to be on a podcast. So there you go.
Yeah, I'm trying my best.
So did you also want to talk about what's happening with the hormones?
So there is a lot that happens with hormones, but I'm just going to touch on two. So I don't know if people who are listening have heard of this before, but they do say when a woman gives birth after, you know, a couple of days after, they have like the biggest drop in their hormone that any person has to go through, and they normally label this this drop in hormone as the postnatal blues. And obviously, depending on the person, depends how badly they're affected by it. But what this hormone is actually progesterone. So progesterone we naturally make within the body. However, when we are pregnant, our placenta expels out more progesterone, so we have this high level of progesterone. And what progesterone is, it's actually a mood elevating hormone. So it makes us feel a lot more happier, lighter, probably helps, you know, with the labor and things like that alongside oxytocin. But yeah, it's this mood elevating hormone. So you can imagine that as soon as you give birth and then give birth to your placenta, because the placenta is not making this progesterone anymore, within a couple of days, your progesterone level just absolutely crashes back down to pre-pregnancy. So you can imagine how you could feel if these mood elevating hormone is pretty much gone. So that's why we get a little bit sad or emotional. So it really explains that time. But what happens as well is I just wanted to touch a little bit about estrogen. So estrogen levels also rise around that time, and they do eventually go back to pre-pregnancy levels. However, they take a lot longer. And what can happen is sometimes your estrogen, if we are not supported by a good village and we are in this constant level of stress and anxiety and we're not getting that support, our estrogen levels can go up even higher and we go into this like estrogen dominant sort of state. And if the estrogen dominant state continues for a lot longer, and I'm talking about like, you know, months on end, some of the symptoms of that could be like a lowered libido, depression, anxiety, mood swings, you know, irritability, fatigue, insomnia, you know, headaches. And then if it goes on for even longer, sometimes you can even have thyroid disorders that happen from that too. So I just wanted to touch on that a little bit because it's something that we don't really talk about. And it's one of the reasons why, you know, even though people might look at like the doula services and like, oh, you know, it's so self-indulgent to be having a massage or a herbal bath, but it actually, you know, these practices, we do them first of all to help with oxytocin for good breastfeeding, but we also do this to help your hormones out as well. So we don't get into this estrogen dominant state for too long. So there will always be a little bit of estrogen dominance in those first couple of weeks, and that's where you might feel those feelings. But we kind of want to, you know, make sure that we're doing things to help bring it back to pre-pregnancy levels.
Wow, I find that so interesting. And especially, and I say this a lot, I believe that there is a lack of support postpartum. Depending on your model of care, but most models of care, I mean, you know, you go home, you might get a visit from the baby nurse, which is really more so to do with the baby and how they're feeding. You have a 6-week checkup with a GP who, depending on how good they are, look,
depends how good the checkup is.
We're not
going to
go into GPs.
that's right.
Exactly. But no, like, shouldn't this be the time for education on like, okay, this is what's happening to your body and, you know, all of that stuff.
If only.
But it's not. Yeah. It's like you're lucky if they just maybe check your stitches and ask you a couple of questions and that's about it.
Yeah, it's pretty sad. And we don't speak about the postpartum very much either. Even with like my first child, my God, I did not prepare myself for the postpartum at all. I think I heard a few people say, oh, just make sure you have a few meals, you know, ready. So I froze like one or two meals. But I actually said to myself, I'm like, well, my husband's going to have 5 weeks off with me, which is like, that's a lot. You know, some people don't even have that. I'm like, surely between the two of us, we'll be able to cook a meal. But what you don't realize is, especially if you want to go down the breastfeeding path, it is a full-time job. You know, you are literally breastfeeding and your baby is at your breast for essentially 24 hours a day for the first few weeks of their life until it becomes really well established. So, you know, and then your partner is just as much overwhelmed and sleep deprived as you are. And you're lucky as a mother because even though you may be sleep deprived, you have all those beautiful hormones that can be working for you, whereas your partner doesn't. So you really can't rely on your partner as being your, you know, postpartum plan because they are going to be just as probably shocked as you are. So you really need to reach out like to other people as well to give you a hand during that time. And yeah, I honestly remember being that whole month of my first daughter's life, I was just in shock. I was in survival mode. Luckily, my parents were giving, you know, were coming in and bringing food. But other than that, I was not prepared at all. And I really wish people would speak about this more and what happens.
So you've mentioned rest as obviously being one of the ways to encourage and support your body to heal. Are there any other things that could facilitate this?
With the physical body, you mean? To help the physical body?
Yeah, let's go with physical to start. But we can get into the other things too.
There is a lot.
We'll go into the mental load a little later.
Yeah. Well, talking about, I guess, ways in which we can help postpartum, coming from being traditionally trained and learning about other cultures, I think it's good to sort of note that every culture has a different way, or I guess you could say protocol or whatever, after a woman gives birth, I should say. And they do different things and they have different beliefs about what is the best way to help facilitate healing in the postpartum. And sadly, our Western culture doesn't really recognize any of this. We don't really recognize the importance of, or even how much a woman goes through in that postpartum, and then the importance of, you know, doing things to help assist us get back to, you know, health and vitality pretty much after we have our baby. So the commonalities that I've found in traditions and in my learnings is, yes, rest is a huge one. And some cultures take it to the absolute extreme where, you know, the mum or the mother-in-law will move into the house with the mother who's just given birth, and she will do everything for the mother, and the mother's not allowed to move at all unless she needs to go to the toilet or to have a shower. But other than that, she's not allowed to do anything. So that's pretty extreme.
Doesn't sound too bad.
Maybe not too extreme
where, like, I can only go to the toilet and shower, but yeah, take a little bit of that. That's quite
like
nice.
A month, like, can you imagine? So rest being a huge one, obviously nourishing food, with your physical body having to heal any sort of wounds or anything. So like collagen-rich foods with lots of healthy fats to support like the breastfeeding as well. Supportive herbs and spices that help with breastfeeding and lactating. So all of those beautiful things. There's also like belly binding that you can do as well. Not every woman likes belly binding. I know some women absolutely love it because it feels like they're getting a nice big hug in that midsection, and it really helps. They feel like they're quite supported and their back isn't hurting as much. But for me, for example, I didn't actually like the belly binding. I really wanted to like it. I really tried, but I don't know. I didn't feel very comfortable with it. So, you know, take it or leave it for what it's worth. But some women really, really love that. Some cultures, they love to give women daily massages, actually. So even though that might seem like a very luxurious thing for us to hear, it's quite a common practice because it boosts that oxytocin in our body, which is actually super important for breastfeeding. So, you know, we speak a lot about like these lactation cookies and things like that, which, you know, have galactagogues in them, which help support lactation. But what they don't tell you is that usually works for about a week or two. And then after that, it's really the oxytocin that's produced in our body, which creates that longevity of the breastfeeding and the milk to come down and having that let down. So there are traditions that really, that's why we really focus on like massage, because it, you know, brings out that oxytocin. And, you know, things like herbal baths, which do help with healing, but they're also just a beautiful, relaxing thing to do as well. So any ways we can boost oxytocin is great. And in our modern world, that can even look like watching Netflix or something, you know. It doesn't have to be.
What I did for my night feeds, especially when, you know, and especially first baby, when I was getting up and sitting on the couch to do the night feeds because I was a bit too nervous doing the feeding in bed. To start with, but I would save my favorite shows for the night feeds so that even when I was woken up, I was like, oh, damn, baby's waking me up. Like, oh, I get to watch my show. So bringing some excitement into it, oxytocin, happiness. Yeah, yeah, I never even thought of it that way. I just thought of it as a great way to, like, get out of bed. But
yeah, but it's also a great way to pass the time with a breastfeeding baby because.
Yeah, and that too. Because then you don't mind. It's like, oh, an hour, that's fine because, like, that's as long as an episode is. So it's good. Is there any research to show us that women who have a more supportive network postpartum have lower rates of postpartum depression or higher rates of breastfeeding? Is there anything to show us this? Because it makes sense to me.
Yeah, there definitely is. I can't really cite the studies to you because I don't remember off the top of my head. However, there is definitely evidence to show that 100%. And It's really obvious in cultures who do have that supportive network. I think in our Western culture, whether by choice or not by choice, we've become very isolated. And I think for those reasons, because we don't have that support network, that's why there's such a rise in that postnatal anxiety and depression. It is a lot more complicated than just saying you need a supportive network, you know, to have these sort of anxiety and depression coming through in the postpartum. But having one and having people to rely on and genuine people who, you know, understand what the postpartum really means and assisting with that. So, you know, giving you the things that you actually do need, like, for example, a meal, or coming in and not expecting to have to hold the baby, or not expecting even sometimes to see you. Do you know what I mean? Because you might be sleeping or whatever. And that's the things that you really need to focus on in the postpartum. So, but yeah, definitely, 100%.
So how can a postpartum doula help with this? Well, what do they do firstly?
So a postpartum doula essentially is someone who looks like helps out with the mother. And depending on what their background is and their training, every single doula is very, very unique. They bring very different skill sets into the space. So there are some doulas who are trained, for example, to, yes, they're there to help out a little bit with the mother, but they might also be helping out with like the baby. So helping with settling, sleeping, that sort of thing. Or they can be more traditionally trained, which is what I am. So I'm more there to support the mother go through that healing phase, making sure she's nourished. So the way that we can do this is generally a doula will create a plan, and we try to do this before the baby is born. So we try to set out some kind of plan to help that mother. So we try and figure out if there's people in her life that can help her. If there is, then we try to set in boundaries for those people because, you know, sometimes we need those boundaries and we can do it in a very kind manner. So for example, you know, just setting that expectation that, you know, if you are a mother who wants to breastfeed, be like, you know, because I want to establish a good breastfeeding, I might not always be available to come out and entertain you, or, you know, I might be in my bedroom like trying to breastfeed, because especially those first couple of weeks, you pretty much got your top off the whole time. You know, it's not very good when visitors are coming through the door. So just setting that expectation that you might not always be available. You know, asking them, can you please bring a meal? You know, so we set all those things up and we speak about these things and we do a bit of education as well about what happens to the body, like we're sort of talking about now in the postpartum, and also just showing the mother that some things that she will go through are very normal as well. So some of the feelings that she may have is very normal. So setting up villages, setting up food services. And then obviously our role that comes in is helping out the mother. And like I said, because we have unique abilities, it also depends what we would do. So some doulas might give massages and they might, you know, allow for those herbal baths to be given, or they might just, you know, cook food, or they might not cook food. So it really depends on the doula. So I always say to people, if you are looking for a postpartum doula, a lot of the time they will do like a free initial sort of consultation, or like a meet and greet, I like to call it. And you can find out if you align with that doula and if you really believe in, you know, in them and what they are about. And yeah, because you do have to remember having a baby, it is a very vulnerable time for you and your family. So you really want someone that you're comfortable with and you really align with.
Yeah, that's right. I think, yeah, it's a really great thing for people if they can access a postpartum doula to have that support, because a lot of us don't have that village. And I know that you talk about that a lot. So creating that village or building that village can be so helpful. But for those who can't access a postpartum doula, what would be your three main tips to help them navigate their transition into becoming a mum?
So you just mentioned it, but my very first tip would be village, 100% village. And now I'm not saying to rally up every single, you know, mum, dad, aunt, uncle, you know, best friend, whatever. When I say building a village, I mean people, I kind of touched on this before, people who will come in who will understand your boundaries and your wishes, who will bring a meal and not expect much in return, who will come in and help you, you know, unload the dishwasher or do your dishes or help out with your other children. They're the sort of people that you want to bring in. And if you don't really have people like that, if you know that maybe your family, your family might stress you out, then simply just saying, you know, we don't wish for, you know, visitors at this time. Just give us a little bit of space while we're adjusting to a new baby. So that is okay too, but you still want to maybe ensure you are getting support from somewhere else. So you might even have like a really good friend who could come in and even just, you know, someone to talk to if that's what you want. It's whatever you think you will need. Another great tip that I have is there is, if you have a really good village and people are bringing food, there's a great website called mealtrain.com. And you can register yourself and you can like, there's like a calendar on there and you can pick days when you'd like someone to bring a meal. So you can register them. Like you can literally schedule in, can you please bring a meal on this day? Maybe here's some recipes or can you please do your really good chicken soup that you do, you know? And then they know, okay, on that day I'm going to bring a meal. Yeah, so that's a really
great little
website. Yeah.
Yeah.
And then my second tip would be sort of going on to food is nutrition. So, you know, we really focus on nutrition in pregnancy, but it's just as important postpartum, you know, and I'm not just speaking like we need good nutrition to help our bodies heal. So if we have any tears, or, you know, if you've had a cesarean or any cuts, we need that to heal properly. So we need good nutrition during that time. But also if you are breastfeeding, your baby is still taking a lot out of you when you're breastfeeding. So it's still important to have, you know, great nutritious food available to you. And for anyone who's listening and who has breastfed, you will know how hungry you get. It is constant. You want to eat all of the time.
Yeah, the 3 a.m. munchies.
Yeah, that's it.
I'm starving and I just grab whatever I can in the pantry.
I know. But, yeah, just making sure you've got lots of snacks and things. So if people are bringing meals, if they don't want to make a full meal, maybe make some snacks that you can easily, you know, eat.
And eat one-handed.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah, so nutrition is a big one and obviously keeping hydrated. Make sure you have, if you're like breastfeeding, have like a little station set up. So if you know you want to breastfeed in bed or you have a certain chair or something you want to sit on, just your partner can do this as well. He can help out. Just make sure that always has like a drink bottle on there and some snacks. That can really go a long way. So you're not just grabbing something out of the pantry, like you said, out of desperation because you're so hungry. Yeah, so something like that is nice to have on hand. And then my third one, which I already touched on, are like oxytocin boosting practices, just to help with your hormones and also if you are deciding to breastfeed, to help with your breastfeeding as well. So what I generally do with my clients and my to-be mamas, I get them to write a list. I generally cap it at about 5 of things that they love to do, you know, when they're pregnant. And I get them to do that before the baby comes, so then they're not having to think about it. So whatever they love to do, whether it's listening to music or drawing or whatever it is, whatever brings them joy. And then after they give birth, to look at that list and think, okay, how can I incorporate maybe one of these into my maybe once a week or every day if it's possible? We forget about this, you know. We have this newborn and, yes, it is super overwhelming and we're trying to figure it out. But at the same time, it is also so, so important to look after ourselves. And I hate using the word self-care because I don't know, people throw it around so much, but the reality is when you're a mum, it's hard. Like the way that they throw out self-care, it's like you have to get up, you know, earlier in the morning and you have to have an hour of, you know, to be able to do your self-care. as a mum, that's not very realistic. And then that's we might just give up on the idea. We might just be like, oh, I can't do it. I can't factor it in. But for example, one of mine is I like to meditate. And it's, you know, brought me a lot of peace and sanity during my years of motherhood. So I just do it. And my kids are there and they might just see me doing it and I don't really care. And it might not be the full half an hour meditation that I used to do, but I do like a couple of minutes. And yes, I might have someone tugging at my sleeve going, mom, you know, get me a snack or whatever. But I give myself just that little bit of time, that couple of minutes to do that every day because it's important to me. So this is something that I really try to emphasize as well with my clients to remember about themselves a little bit too and do something for themselves. And it might actually help with their mental health too during this whole period as well.
So what inspired you to become a postpartum doula? Was it your own experiences?
I remember when I was pregnant with my second baby, I started to really look into doing work with women and babies. It started to really interest me. And it wasn't until after I gave birth to my second daughter, I had a really beautiful, like, water birth at home. And I remember going, you know, this is so possible. Like, how beautiful is this experience? I'd love to be able to share this with women. And I was thinking, how could I do this, you know? And I thought maybe I should become a midwife. It would be easy for me because I'm already a nurse, a registered nurse. But I then didn't really want to work in the hospital system. And then I'm like, oh, maybe I could look into doulas. And when I started looking into doulas, that's when I discovered that there's also postpartum doulas. And although I do love birth and supporting women through birth, to be honest, everything that I have done in my life, it feels as if it's led me to this point. Like every piece of training and everything that I've done has sort of led me into becoming a postpartum doula. You know, I love to cook. I love food. And so when I heard about it, I was so excited. And like I mentioned before, my postpartum experience was so terrible that I was like, why isn't this more mainstream? Why don't people know about this? Why can't this knowledge be around? Even like postpartum doulas, I said to my husband, if I knew, I would have had a postpartum doula on my second pregnancy, definitely, just to help us through if I had known about them. So I'm really, my messaging now is I'm really trying to get this sort of information out there to as many people as I can so people are aware so they don't have to have such an experience.
Oh, definitely. And I think this is why it's so important for first-time mums in particular to hear this because, you know, often it's the second and the third-time mums who are investing in the postpartum and preparing for it because, you know, they've been through it and they know how hard it can be. So it would be great if more first-time mums can listen to this episode and can look into how to best prepare for this period. So yeah, thank you so much for sharing all that information. I'm going to leave all your details in the show notes. So if anyone wants to connect with you or have a look at your Instagram, they can find you. It's just at Back to Nourishing Mamas, and I'll leave your email there as well. Thank you so much again for joining us. Bye.
Thank you so much, Tina. Thanks for having me. Bye-bye.